Yeah. Why not? I sure. I thought you were going to read your interview with Emily Dickinson poem. She interviewed Emily Dickinson. Do you believe that? Isn't that amazing? It's a great poem. It's a wonderful to read with such wonderful writers. Joan, thanks so much for doing all this. Since so many of us are writers or lovers of writing or both, and I'm sure you all need to know, if not now, that at some point in your life, how to get a job as a writer, especially a poet. This is called, I'm going to open with a poem called Job Description. Isn't it my job to loaf and lean at the table, to nap at inconvenient hours? Aren't I getting paid to speak inappropriately, to remain silent when pressed, to avoid meetings? Would you rather me be punctual? When the snow arrives, I'm paid to stick out my tongue. When the light bulb shatters, my task is to describe the dark. Don't expect me to always return to the same chair, like a dog to the same tin bowl in the corner of the kennel. I sleep when others are awake. I'm awake when others sleep. Hunger is the most important ingredient in my diet. When you point to a plane, I'm staring at the moon. When you point to the moon, I'm digging the earth with my teeth. I'll sign your petition with my epic. Don't follow me unless you want to go somewhere else. Don't be surprised if I respond to your chastisement with an embrace, or if I claim paradise from my dung heap, or if I continue to talk long after the wind has spoken its last elegy. Thank you. It's true. We'll stop talking. Since I love immigrant poems, I'm going to Italy next week, so it was really inspiring. Appreciate that, I think. Three Card Money. If you're in New York, you know not to play Three Card Money. When somebody who's got three cards on a box, in the cardboard box on the street, asks you what to pick out the red card of the three, don't do it. Just walk away. Because this is what happens if you don't. It's called Three Card Monte. I walked everywhere on that island, an island myself, 20, just up from the Midwest, ready to begin that long book called my life. Aimless, swayed by whatever was at hand, strolling, blind. On Fifth Avenue, a figure, emaciated, barely distinguishable in the skyscraper's shadow, on the steaming sidewalk, inside a circle of watchers. Above his podium cardboard box, he flashed three cards, two clubs, and one heart, the queen, then turned them over in the quick slide, hands gliding like acrobats, the cards revolving around and over and under and through until they lost their shapes, spinning like blades, as if by some inner force, a fast-forward choreography. I couldn't keep my eyes off when I was sure to be the queen, the one to watch, certain if I held her attention, it would prove something I needed, what I had to master, this street preacher staring straight into my eyes and whispering, his voice like gravel, a 20 will get you 100. And I was confident in the heart I tracked, staked my savings on what my eyes stalked. Of course, I was wrong. And I returned to the Midwest, where I had to start again from scratch, following in my mind the movement of those cards and the brilliant fingers that manipulated them until they became a blur, like that city I'm not even certain was there at all. Actually, my most recent collection is a chapbook called Among the Scribes, and I want to thank Jamie and Michael Sims back there for this. I feel like I'm among the scribes here, it would be a good thing to read from it. Many of the poems are about writers of some sort. So I'm thinking maybe we should bring in a few. Like maybe Proust, perhaps? Anybody want to bring in Proust? No? Okay. It's a short poem, of course. The summer you read Proust. Remember the summer you read Proust? And the hammock tied to the apple trees. Your daughters climbed, their shadows merging with the shadows of the leaves spilling out and onto those long, ardorous sentences. All afternoon and into the evening. The robins, jays, the distant dog, the occasional swaying, the way the hours rocked back and forth, that gigantic book holding you in its woven nest. You couldn't get enough pages. You wish that with every turning 1,000 were added. The words falling you into sleep. The sleep waking you into words. The summer you read Proust, which lasted the rest of your life. And it did, yeah. All right, let's bring in Wordsworth, shall we? After Proust, I think we need to bring in Wordsworth. This is, my daughter's in, when she was in 9th grade, or 8th grade, or something, needed to analyze and interpret a poem, and for some reason she picked Wordsworth's poem, Lines Written a Few Miles Above Tintern Abbey. Simple poem there. So, and then I realized as we were going over it together that it was the anniversary of my father's passing. So this is on the 23rd anniversary of my father's passing, I read Lines Written a Few Miles Above Tintern Abbey with my daughter. One of my longest titles. Corn husks newly mown, apples recently fallen in summer's last wisps of warmth. If I listen closely, I can still hear you calling my name for supper, more insistent each year, as with each year I'm more distracted with my life. Now, at the table on our porch, overlooking the harvested garden, the fallen leaves, a wild, secluded scene, a Sunday afternoon, surrounded by woods and copses. No hedgerows, but in the near distance, perhaps a hermit's cave or two. I assist my daughter with Wordsworth, puzzling over this long poem that insists on love for nature, on recollection of senses sweet. I want her to know that passion, that sublime, a word she looks up and discovers grandeur, awe, and after a bit of struggle, I want her to understand what living soul might mean and seeing into the life of things, what these years, your absence, has taught me, and perhaps what mine might yet teach her, that all we behold, these cobalt streaks of sky visible through the empty branches, this garden soil still holding remnants of spring's plantings, this poetry, it's full of blessings. Oh. I stole a little bit from Wordsworth there. let's bring in Whitman, shall we? It's time for Walt. Though we know he's everywhere. I went to did a reading at the library, in public library in Camden, New Jersey, which at the time I think was the murder capital of the country. It may still be, maybe not. Okay. And the house in which he died is there, of course, in Camden. So I toured it or went into it and checked it out. It's called At Whitman's House, Camden, New Jersey. Well, I saw your boot soles beneath the rocking chair in the second-story bedroom you died in, and you were not contained between any of them and your hat, which hung on a peg on a wall. Nor did the bed hold you or your walking cane prop you up. You are not contained anywhere in that house across the street from the prison whose residence you would celebrate, nor in the backyard where the vine still spins around the doorframe, nor in the traffic from the freeway just beyond the city limits. No, Walt, and I did, in fact, look for you under those boot soles, which were ready and waiting for a pair of feet to slip into them, and the cane stared back at me with longing. I want to do this a request for a poem, which doesn't happen too often. So I'm going to read it, even though I wanted to read it anyway. It sounds better if I had a request. So, my mother was when my mother was pretty much dying, she had acute Alzheimer's and was basically stone deaf. But she only had a little short matter of hours or days left. And for some odd reason, I decided to read to her from the book of Ecclesiastes. That's what we Jews do, apparently. This is called My Mother Argues with Ecclesiastes, with her Alzheimer's in her. Okay. At the Wailing Wall, when she danced with the dancers, that was her time, that was her place. She ate and drank and enjoyed all the good of her labor. And now her body is struggling, each breath under the purple comforter, her right hand holding the white sheet, her mouth slightly open, her pale cheek sunken, her pink gown open at the breasts, her eyes delicate as moth wings, closed. This almost death mask, these last living moments. Is it true, as it comes to pass, that all, as it says, is emptiness? These words, this effort, loving all, trusting few, always having something in reserve. If she had one, she needed two, she'd say. If she had two, she needed three. The way she wouldn't trust the banks, a little of her fortune in each, or her sons, a little of her wisdom for each, not all for one, not the whole in one heart, in case it breaks, and you're left, she'd say, with nothing. And here I am, a good son, or trying to be, at her bedside, reading to her through her Alzheimer's and her stone deafness and her dying from Ecclesiastes, whom she interrupts with her characteristic chutzpah. No, you schlemiel, she shouts. The day of death is not better than the day of birth. Are you a mashugana? She continues, embarrassing me in front of this wise preacher. The house of mourning is not greater than the house of feasting. Have you ever had children? Have you ever had the blintzes at Corky's and Lenny's? Have you ever drunk four cups of wine on Passover? Eat, drink, and be merry. There we can agree. Yet with each breath that comes to my bones in her womb, I continue to read to her. Sorrow is better than laughter, I read, and I know she's ready to sue him. She's asking for his name and number. In this, the beginning of her ending, under the purple comforter. One generation passeth away, I continue. There is no remembrance of former things, neither shall there be any remembrance of things to come. And my mother rises again to kvetch. Is this man a putz? Is he blind? Is not my son, pointing to me, my afterlife? Her breath is slowing now, the nurse applying delicately the morphine. And yet she continues, can't he see the bone of my bone, the flesh of my flesh? And so will I, in fact, carry her with me all the days of my life? And what will she carry, empty of her body, the air her sanctuary? Afternoons we would nap together, the shade drawn against the sharp light, and we'd play the game of who falls asleep first. Her assuring breath, inhaling time, exhaling chance, under the purple comforter, arguing with Ecclesiastes from beginning to end. All right. Thanks. One more. And since my philosopher friends are here, I'm going to read a poem that mentions one. But we won't get into a discussion about it because we don't have time. Don't Ask Spinoza, it's called. Don't Ask Spinoza. It's really not about Spinoza, but I figured I'd get his attention with that. What is the sparrow on the tassels establishing? Like happiness, here, gone. Saturday morning, August, pleasure of poetry and fresh eggs, from the Stallard's chickens and just-picked tomatoes. Meanwhile, the baler scripts its stanzas, poetry of sweetness, poetry of all-day labor, poetry the cows will eat. It's the Sabbath, when we pass from the workaday world and into the world set aside for beauty, when God collapses in his chair and lights the candles and blesses himself. So what if our ancestors were herring dealers and Talmudic scholars? Half of me is dust, one of them said, half of me is wind. Even Spinoza, in a less rational mood, inclines to let it go, let its philosophy of ethics drift off like sleep, like the crickets on the sassafras, because certain matters can only be taught in a whisper, like late summer, this wheel, this parable, this radiance. Why not a little shade? Why not slip off our sandals and soak our calloused feet in the water? Even the swallowtail rests on the Queen Anne's lace. Even the koi settle in the shade of the pier. Even the chicory is shy in the rarity of its blue. Afternoons we turn over the compost, shovel thick black soil into the wheelbarrow, mix it under the blueberry bushes, lay exhausted, and read about the world to come, about the 248 words that constitute our holiest prayer, the swallowtail floating its piano key wings across the mid-afternoon sky. And for this little while, we believe in the stillness of the moment, as if the grapes weren't fattening toward ripeness, and therefore won't be picked and eaten, and our children will never grow old. Thank you.
Now,